So what do we know? What do we know about remdesivir, a possible treatment for COVID-19, about beach closings or openings, about how many more people will die? We have so many questions, and we've been bringing in experts for answers. And today I'm going to fangirl a little here because we have longtime New York Times science writer Donald McNeil, who's dedicated his life to providing accurate information about outbreaks, including AIDS, Ebola, SARS. He's now one of the leading voices of reason and science on the coronavirus. We've been planning to talk for a while. What a perfect moment. Donald McNeil, welcome.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
And let's start with the antiviral drug remdesivir. Data from a government study shows it reduced recovery time for people in a trial group from 15 days to 11 days. We know Anthony Fauci yesterday went out of his way to say how significant this was. Proof a drug can block this virus. Does that mean it keeps COVID-19 from getting progressively worse in a patient?
Hopefully. Remember, this was a trial that was unblinded midway in the trial, and the effect was big enough so that you have to change the course of the trial and offer everybody who's on placebo the drug. But it does not mean that it's a miracle drug. This is sort of like a little bit better than Tamiflu does when you use that for for influenza. It shortens the course of the illness, but it's not like, you know, antibiotics used to be that were literally like Lazarus drugs that let you get up out of your bed, and or like HIV drugs were in the early days when people who were at death's door were suddenly pulled back. It gives you more of a fighting chance. We're still looking for a drug that's a real antiviral cure that really targets the virus and wipes it out. So this isn't it yet. Mm.
It's taken intravenously. It's not a pill that you can pop. You have to be in the hospital for it. But might it be like AZT was for HIV, a story you were very involved covering, in that it might become part of a cocktail?
Possibly, yes. I'm more optimistic about monoclonal antibodies. Mm. Experts I talk to are more optimistic about monoclonal antibodies, that we will eventually figure out which antibodies are the right ones that really neutralize this virus. We'll be able to grow those in cell cultures and inject them into people. And that should give some quite strong protection for a while, for as long as those antibodies last. Mm. And then if you can get it into enough people, you can sort of drive the virus out of existence. But that's not going to happen anytime soon, because it takes a while to first find the antibodies and then find a way to splice them into a virus that can grow, and then grow a lot of them and then infuse them into people.
But just for a second, when you say remdesivir stops COVID-19 sooner, in this virus in particular, I'm thinking that might be a little more important, because we're hearing how people seem to be getting well and then they get worse. And I'm wondering if you can stop it before they mysteriously turn that corner.
You don't always know where you are in the progress of the disease. We haven't really got the system working in the United States the way we should. I mean, we now have people recuperating at home if they have mild disease. And that's actually quite dangerous policy. And it's something they don't do in China or in Asia, because they know people can crash. So when you're at home, you can infect your family, as Chris Cuomo did. Mm. And also you can crash. And if your healthcare system is overwhelmed, you may not get an ambulance for an hour or two, when normally, you know, you get an ambulance in 6 to 8 minutes in New York City. So in China, they would have you recuperate in a center with a lot of other people with mild cases so that they could catch the crashing ones. We've tended to put people like that in hotels, and that's a bad idea, because some of them died alone in their rooms because nobody was there
exactly
to catch them.
I think 4 or 5 in New York City in a short period of time.
Yeah, it's a dumb policy. Yeah. They're not learning from the all these lessons are to be learned from overseas, and they're not learning them. They're not looking hard enough at what other countries have done.
Well, Don McNeil, pick something else out that U.S. officials aren't seeing in your mind.
Well, I mean, look, our states are coming out of lockdown way, way, way before. If they were in other countries, they would be coming out of lockdown. I mean, China didn't bring any of its cities out of lockdown until they had zero new cases for 14 days, which is the incubation period of the virus. So that meant you were pretty darn sure you'd wiped out the virus in your city. That way, once you come out, you can quickly jump on any spread and do contact tracing. But if you have several hundred cases still in your city, here we're saying we want to see cases. In other countries, they would say we want those cases gone for 14 days. That's how you stay on top of the virus. So we're doomed to this sort of hammer and dance sawtooth kind of next 2 years, where we're going to come out of hiding and try to get the economy started again. But then, you know, everything will look quiet for a couple of weeks, but then cases are going to start to go up. And depending on how you detect those cases, it might be through fevers using the Kinza app. It might be through positive tests. It might be through hospital admissions, which is if you get to the point where you're having to detect cases by hospital admissions or deaths, your surveillance system is really not good enough.
You mentioned the Kinza app. I just want to jump in. This is the Kinza Smart Thermometer. We'll post a story on that, which is uploading the data from its thermometers so that it can see where hotspots are across the country, even before the CDC.
Yes. I've written about this app for 3 years because I thought it was brilliant. I've watched them, and I've watched the way the CDC tracks flu seasons, and I've realized that they saw the same trends in flu across the country, but they saw them at least 2 weeks, sometimes 3 weeks, before the CDC did.
Well, so, Donald McNeil, I think you were just pretty straightforward, but I'm going to ask you to be even more so. Florida is opening up all but three counties, parks, outdoor seating at restaurants, beaches. You're saying that's a deadly mistake.
I think it's going to be. I'm careful about predicting the future, but if you can't be sure where your cases are, they can spread quite a bit. I mean, we know in New York City that cases were probably spreading as early as February, and we didn't catch it until all of a sudden we got the tests in mid-March, and by that time we were in this horrible situation where we then had, you know, thousands of people die. This is learning to do surveillance the hard way, by using your citizens as guinea pigs. I don't think this is a smart move for any politician. I know they're under a great deal of pressure to get businesses back to work, but the virus is no longer just in cities like New York and New Orleans now. It's in Appalachia. It's in southern Utah. It's in northern Maine. It's in really remote regions of the country. And if they open up and get people back into too much contact with each other without knowing where the virus is spreading until the emergency rooms get busy, people are going to pay for that with their lives.
How do you think it's spreading? We had that new report recently, including one in the journal Nature, saying, you know, we knew in the past that these were big droplets that would land on things, which is why you had to clean all these surfaces. And we know that we're wearing masks to keep whatever we have in, but it may not keep those big droplets out unless it's a, you know, a very professional mask, which is why we stay far away from each other. But now there's reporting that the virus may be tiny, little flecks of it that may be suspended in the air and aerosolized. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it looks like that is the case because there have been cases where people have been infected. There are a number of studies where people are infected many feet away. There was an interesting study from China where you see where one diner sat during a meal, and he not only infected everybody at the table, but he infected people 15 feet away at the next table, on the opposite side of the table, and people 15 feet behind him. And he didn't get up and cough in anybody's face. You know, measles transmits this way. It's not that the virus is floating alone in the air. It's that you can get enough virus into a tiny droplet to start an infection. So we have basically zero defenses against it so that it can trigger an infection through that. And that's quite worrisome. And the other thing that's quite worrisome is it's very clear that there are a lot of asymptomatic carriers. And those carriers are singing, breathing, coughing, speaking. It's much more dangerous indoors because the air is still indoors and those particles hang in the air. Outdoors, they basically blow away.
Yeah. There's been talk of certificates proving you're immune, and that goes back to the testing for antibodies. After somebody's recovered, they might have the antibodies showing that they fought it off safely. But then we thought there was debate about whether or not antibodies, you know, you can have an antibody for a couple of years for a cold coronavirus, and then it wears off, and a couple of years later, you can still get that cold coronavirus. So do you think the antibodies is an absolute proof that you're immune?
I think we don't know yet. Normally, when you have IgG antibodies, which are the second group of antibodies, your body has these IgM antibodies that sort of sit around, kind of generic antibodies that attack anything foreign. And then your immune system learns the shape of the thing it's attacking, and the T cells and B cells, which are types of white blood cells, produce another set of antibodies called IgG antibodies. Now, those are usually specific, but we don't know what level of antibodies you need in order to be protected. We don't know if you need both those antibodies plus the primed cells, which is called cellular immunity. We haven't figured out what it is and how long the protection lasts. So once we figure that out, and it may mean that you have something more complicated than a simple finger prick test in order to figure that out. I mean, as Tony Fauci says, with almost every disease, getting the disease and recovering from it gives you some immunity. I remember my daughter had a classmate in her class in kindergarten who got chickenpox twice. And that's theoretically unheard of, but actually it happens. Some people mount a weak immune response the first time, and then they get chickenpox again. But we don't know yet what creates immunity, what titer of antibodies, how primed the cells have to be. Once we figure that out, I'm sure there will be a lot of people who are immune and will be able to issue certificates. And I hope they aren't written certificates, because then you can just hand it to somebody else. I hope it's something that a chip under your skin or an app on your cell phone that is attached to your face and your fingerprint so that it can't be switched with others. We need to do something secure so that people who are not immune are not going out and posing as immune and getting sick.
Yeah. In a different America. Look, we're going to link people to your article the year ahead. It has some of your coronavirus predictions, including that many more Americans are going to die than the White House is saying. It's killing more than 2,000 Americans a day, more than heart disease or cancer. A couple things.
Americans
First of all,
have already died that more than the White House predicted. They predicted 60,000. We crossed that yesterday or the day before yesterday. Now that the same model they use says 74. But that model ends on August 4th. There's no prediction for beyond that. I mean, if we go out and behave like we did back in February, we'll be back on the path to 2 million. As the White House admitted, we were on the path to before.
We have to stop, sadly. New York Times veteran science writer Donald McNeil. This is his beat, pandemics. Donald, look forward to having you back again at some point. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.